Rule number one, say what you need to say and be done. People cannot consume all of them. They will just remember one, if you're lucky, two highlights. You just need to boil it down to that one big headline.
Hello and welcome to the Shiny New Object Podcast. My name is Tom Ollerton. I'm the founder of Automated Creative, the creative effectiveness ad tech platform. And this is a regular podcast about the future of data-driven marketing. Every week or so, I have the absolute pleasure and privilege of speaking to one of our industry's leaders. And this week's no different. I'm on a call with Idil Chakum, who is Senior Vice President and Insights at Audacy. Idil, for anyone who doesn't know who you are and what you do, could you give us a bit of a background?
Sure. So I lead the research and insights function at Audacy. We are the second largest broadcaster of radio and podcasts in the United States. And a media and entertainment company. So my team is responsible for all things related to audio and Audacy as it relates to thought leadership, helping with ad sales, and also really elevating the profile of audio and why any marketer should include audio in their mix.
And what were your roles before that? How did you get to that?
Prior to that, right. So I had a long run at Nielsen on the media measurement side and working with advertisers across categories on custom solutions. So Nielsen is perhaps best known for its ratings, but then there are a lot of customized things that we can do for clients. And I've mostly worked on agency and research provider side, and then came into the publishing side of things. So if there are three seats you can imagine at the research and marketing related table, agency, publisher, and provider, I think I've sat on all three equally by now.
So what advice would you give to a smart, driven student who's doing all the right things but wanted to follow in your footsteps?
My number one advice, and I see very few people do this, and I have fallen into the trap of not doing it. Number one advice is to interview back. And I'll explain what I mean by this. Sometimes when you're so driven and you're so dedicated to your career and you just want to get that job and you want them to honor it to you, and you're saying, I have a pulse, take me, please, I'll do anything. You forget who you're going to work with, what kind of environment you're getting into, forget to check whether they're likely to mentor you, which you absolutely need at any stage in your career, whether they are likely to invest in you, what kind of projects you might be getting. So instead of, yes, it's important, obviously, to answer questions that you're getting, say, in an interview process, but it's also important to use those research chops to interview back and maybe look for some proxy elements around, like, do they value people? Do they value insights? Do they have time for their family? Interview back a little bit.
Can you tell me how you arrived at that opinion? That come from hard-won experience?
A little bit, yeah. No, hindsight is 20/20. It's so nice to be in a position to say, well, in the past 20 years, my experience shows that this is something valuable. In looking back and assessing for myself, like what made me happy, what made me regret certain decisions, what made me say, well, it was still worth weathering through. In no job is going to be perfect all the way, because no environment is just perfect and stable at any given moment. Things can change because of external purposes. But I think it's really important, if I may say, oh, I was able to succeed and look back and say, okay, my education helped, my hard work helped, but you can't negate the importance of having a good boss, a good mentor, helpful people along the way. It could be also a colleague who is generous with their time and their knowledge when they're parting advice with you. And that all comes from a good environment. So I think you have to be in a good environment to flourish. And while you may not know everything at the onset of, you know, first experience or coming into a job, you may have certain clues. Like if there are books on the shelves, if people are getting training programs, if there is budget for team building exercises. I mean, these are all clues as to where they put their value.
So do you have a killer bit of data-driven marketing advice that you find yourself sharing most often? Like, is there a silver bullet? Or look, if you keep this close to you, then it will serve you well.
There's no end to editing. That's my headline. And there's nothing that is more important than crisp communication. So whichever one you want to put first, you are as good as your communication. There may be a tremendous finding that you've uncovered after months of work, or something that you have seen because you're privy to, you know, 3,000 different data sets and you're sitting at the junction where they all meet. But unless you're able to communicate that in a way that is compelling and clear and simple, it's not going to land well and it's not going to find its value. So I find myself constantly editing what I write, what I publish, what I even email internally in a company. Keep editing and focus on clear communication.
That advice. So can you let me into a little bit of the how you do that, right? So you, as you say, you sit at the intersection of 3,000 data points, you've got the insight, you're like, yes, everyone needs to know this. And then you write it down, and then you do you like come back to it a day later? Or how do you make sure you've got crystal clear communication? How do you know when you've got it right? And how do you get there?
I think if you went back to your work after you've had the luxury of being away from it for a week, you would still find room for improvement. But the trick is to constantly force yourself to say it with fewer words and fewer slides. And I remember the turning point for this. And it came to me at a point, unfortunately, after I had already published a book by a major publisher and had put a lot of words out there already myself. A boss taught me to get to the point in slide 3 and say, if the presentation and months of work that you have put in had just stopped here, would you be okay? Would the client walk away having learned something from you? So that was rule number one, say what you need to say and be done. So I'm constantly asking myself, okay, could this point be made sooner, highlighted more, but earlier? And usually I'm asking my team to just say what they need to say within 5-6 slides and put the rest into sort of a more detailed outline. So it's out there if for anybody who wants, but the story has to be told right up front. And I remember getting coached on that and being surprised, you know, at how months of work by teams of people got summarized into just a few slides. And you might have to fight the feeling that you got to just show all that you worked on, but there was this other precious bit and there was this other detail that's so important. People cannot consume all of that. They will just remember one, if you're lucky, two highlights. And you need to just craft it so well that they take it all home with that, just that one highlight. Unfortunately, that's what it comes down to when you're so busy and you're receiving information from everywhere. You just need to boil it down to that one big headline.
How do you train people to do that? Because I've worked in agencies for years, and that is not the mentality, right?
Well, you have to fight that urge to show all that you've got. And you have to turn that into putting all that you've got into that one little spot. Training, I love the word you used, training is key. And I think you do it through practice. You do it through collaboration. We oftentimes sound our, say we're writing an article or say we're putting together a deck. Both types of outputs will go to several different colleagues from different backgrounds whose heads are not as close to the project as possible, and can give honest feedback saying, this is where I tripped up. This didn't work for me. This wasn't clear for me, and not be so precious about editing. I think, and then you train your mind and you sit down and say, if I just needed to say it and be done with it, if I weren't in an elevator and I had 5 flights to go through and that's it, what would I need to say? And you're constantly, you find yourself moving things from the tail end of the story, where you do the big reveal, to the top of the story, where you have to hit it big and capture the room's attention. So it comes through practice. It's constant practice. And it's training, like you said.
This is like poetry to my ears. But anyway, we need to move on. This episode of the Shiny New Object podcast is brought to you in partnership with Manfest. Whether it's live in London or streamed online to the global marketing community, you can always expect a distinctive and daring blend of fast-paced content, startup innovation pitches, and unconventional entertainment from Madfest events. You'll find me causing trouble on stage, recording live versions of this podcast, and sharing a beer with the nicest and most influential people in marketing. Check it out at www.madfestlondon.com. We're talking about your shiny new object, which is connections between creative and sonic elements and performance metrics. It's a very long shiny new object, but I'm curious to know, can you unpack that, as they say, and help us understand what that is and why it's your shiny new object?
Well, shiny new object, because it connects, I want to connect the dots between what has remained sort of elusive to measure previously. So a couple of things to unpack there: audio, and within audio, we have radio, we have streaming and streaming radio, and we have podcast. Streaming and podcasts fall under digital, perhaps more easily. And then we have this amazing giant of an industry under radio. And they all have their own different measurement tactics and ways. They don't necessarily readily speak to each other, but with analytics, you can make it all sing beautifully together. And then you have the creative power, right? And we're so historically, I think, used to saying, well, creative rests in the power of some people's minds. It's just that's how it comes to them. They have so many years of experience in the industry. They just shoot it and it happens. And they say it and it falls beautifully, but there's logic to what they're doing. They know probably what elements will resonate well with their audiences. There's so much that goes into creating something that's beautiful, that resonates, that stays with people. Now, take that creative element, take the complexity of metrics that speak their own language, but somehow have to orchestrate well together. How do you get to walk from all of that to the metrics that matter to management, the metrics that matter to people who are going to ask the hard questions? Did this medium work for me? Which channels worked harder for me? So those are different types of questions. And gosh, you have this like creative 30-second piece here. So the shiny new object, and this is what we're working on. We've just published on this on our website, odysseyinc.com, is an analysis of how, first of all, different types of audio work towards these performance goals. And within that, which creative elements were driving those performance goals? Is it the fact that we mentioned a content partnership? Is it the fact that we spoke about our original content? Or is it that we announced an event that we were organizing where people from around the nation flock, you know, and to listen to the latest from artists? So which of these elements and moving parts contributed to those important outcomes? I think the analytical challenge is something that data scientists and analysts and researchers is something that they are used to, but bringing creative elements and putting them side by side with those hard numbers is something that I'm most excited about. And weaving in the sonic elements that are not present in other media is something that I'm excited about.
So tell me more about the report. What were you trying to achieve with that?
The work that we did came from just an internal question of how are we being impactful about using our own media when we're promoting the Odyssey app. So we asked the question of, okay, we're putting in this much money into, or quote unquote, it was remnant media, but this much value into our radio promotions, this much into podcasts, this much into streaming. Which levers should we pull and how can we be smarter about this to drive the most number of downloads at the most efficient level? So that was our question. And then when we delved into it, we saw that all of them were contributing in their own way. And we found some efficiencies in radio. So that was interesting because radio is typically seen as a mainstream and traditional medium. And here you have this streaming app. So wait, you're using the old medium to drive the new medium. That's interesting. So we said, what did we say on radio that compels people to take this action, to switch modality, which is something so difficult actually behaviorally? You're going to hear it on the radio. You're going to drop what you're doing. You're going to go to your phone. You're going to swoosh around, find your settings and download the app. That's a lot to ask from people. And they did it. They did it, and our hypothesis was that they were following their favorite content, and that indeed turned out to be true when we parsed the elements that went into the ads that were driving most of that activity.
So let me see if I understand you correctly. So you had remnant inventory. So that was like ad space that you could use for free, basically, within your own platform or your own media. And then you ran different types of ads on different platforms to different audiences to drive downloads of the app.
It's not free per se. It's still of value. It's given to an internal team saying, well, there's no advertiser running at this time or at this place, and then we could use it to promote our own app.
Exactly. Right. Okay. It has value, but it's not being used. So use it. So was there an equal number of impressions served across all of those different units? Was there an equal number of impressions per type of ad or messaging and so on? Can you help me understand the test of it?
Yeah, sure. I mean, all of this is on odysseyinc.com as well under insights. I don't recall off the top of my head the amount of impressions, but it was there was more on radio. There was then on digital channels in this one analysis to begin with. But the question that we're asking is not just, oh, I'm putting in more. Am I going to get out more out of it? The hard question you're asking is which one is converting more smartly? So it could be that one hypothesis we had going on was that, maybe a digital channel in this case will work strongly for us, will work better for us because they're already on a digital platform. That did happen, but we found because radio is also a more cost-effective channel or value-effective channel, we found that radio worked quite a bit. And we have a lot of people who are, this is where the creative reveals why people are taking the action that they're taking. We have a lot of people who listen to us, not just for their favorite music, but also for their sports teams, for events. They get excited about their favorite influencer and they want to have that voice thread throughout their day. So they are willing to take an extra step and make sure their radio content is with them throughout the day. So it's a huge benefit to their daily life, and that's why they were downloading it.
And what was the nature of the testing within the unit itself? Were you running the same message on all platforms to all people, or did you multivariate test, or how much data did you get back other than which was the best format and unit and place?
So we looked at 92 different creatives across 24 campaigns, but all thematically geared towards the app download.
And did you test like different messaging themes or styles or different artists and so on?
So it's a historical look. It has its advantages, as in you're able to see what happened, so you're doing a hindsight look. What we found was, for instance, content partnerships, sports and related announcements, announcements about the various leagues, and our events. Those are the top three that I can recall right now. Were really powerful in getting people to download the app. There were other things that definitely helped. It helped that we were saying this is an ad-supported medium and the app is free to you. But it was mainly the big takeaway. If I may go back to my big one headline, content is queen. I mean, the great content that they were finding in these pockets of our platform and the appeal of being able to follow that content through on their mobile app was what was converting them.
And so what did you learn that you can pass on directly? What was the kind of the biggest aha moment where you're like, right, okay, I didn't know that?
I didn't expect to see more room for growth under radio. So the analysis showed that we could have you know, been a little bit more aggressive with that value placement, if you will, in that scenario. So you're, you know, it's a model at the end of the day, so I should caveat it. It's a predictive model. So in the scenarios that we ran, we saw that we had even more room for growth. We could have put even more value on radio and gotten even stronger outcomes. That was one aha. I was delighted to see the common theme of, you know, favorite content follow through, impacting results in the hierarchy of things. Like people didn't, we also spelled the name Odyssey. It's not, we also said Odyssey app is free, and we explained some other benefits that they would get from the app, but people veered towards content that they knew and trusted and wanted to have with them throughout their day. So that, I wouldn't say it was such an aha, but it was a verification of what we had been anecdotally seeing and also verifying through other research as to the power of our content.
I would love to carry on talking about this, but unfortunately we're out of time. If someone wants to get in touch with you about the report or any of the things that we've discussed today on the podcast, where would you like them to get in touch with you, and what makes a message that you will respond to?
Absolutely. They can email me. It's my first name dot last name at odyssey.com, and Odyssey Insights or odysseyinc.com has all our information.
Brilliant. You deal. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me.
Hi, just before you go, I'd really appreciate it if you could take the time to write a review of the Shiny New Object podcast on Apple Podcasts or iTunes, whatever it's called these days, or whichever podcast provider you use. We're an indie podcast, so it would go a long way for us if you could just share the word and give us a bit of a support on those channels. That'd just be fantastic. If you haven't got time, that's also cool. And yeah, if you could tell your colleagues about the podcast, and also, if possible, don't forget to subscribe. And I'd love to hear your feedback. If you'd like to speak on the podcast or be a guest, or you think I'm asking the wrong questions, anything, I'd be super interested to hear what you think. So please email me at tom@automatedcreative.net. That's T-O-M at, I'm not going to bother spelling it. Anyway, you'll work it out. Thanks so much.